Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this cold but clear and sunny, beautiful January 9th morning. I like it when it's like this. It's cold and crisp. I'm going to get out and work in the barn today. My wife, I've got to try out some new Christmas stuff. No, not barn stuff. Well, sort of. She got me some really cool flannel-lined, I want to say insulated Carhartt pants and Carhartt shirt so that I don't get cold when I'm out in the barn. Because my barn is not, well, I have heaters, but I don't have, it's not insulated yet. That's a project for this next year. I'm going to have a workshop that's insulated out there. But for now, I can blow this propane heater on me and boy, they're great. It's like a torpedo heater, but it runs off of a 20-pound LPG tank, so you don't have to worry. It's not like dealing with the kerosene and stuff. So anyway, that's my plan for today. I'm going to go out and work in a barn. I've been having a lot of fun out there. It's funny because when you have a barn and you have a lift in the barn, suddenly all the family members go, "Oh, Dad, can you help me with this? I love it." They come over. Yesterday, we worked on brakes on my son-in-law's van, my daughter and son-in-law's van. Yeah, I just have a lot of fun doing that. It's fun to putz around. Let's see. Speaking of putzing around, I'd love to go to a gun show today. There was supposed to be the Huron Gun Collector show up at the Washtenaw Farm Council grounds, but no, it got canceled. So the only one in Michigan is the original Grand Rapids Gun and Knife Show at 4 Mile Showplace. So at least out there, they are doing it. They've got two of them in Ohio, the Yankee Lake Gun Show at the Yankee Lake Ballroom in Brookfield Township, Ohio, and Medina Gun Show at the Medina County Fairgrounds. Missouri's got a couple, the Jefferson City Shooting Sports and Outdoor Show in Jeff City, and the Hannibal Quincy Gun Show at Admiral Kunst Armory in Hannibal, Mo. And actually, I still remember one time I flew into Quincy, and I was heading out west, and I was in a Beechcraft Debonair, and I landed to get fuel, and I'm sitting in the little restaurant there having, you know, a cup of coffee or something like that. And I see on the halfway up the windows, a line drawn, and it said, you know, like 1972 flood or something. So it just goes to show you, I mean, that these floods do come in cycles and stuff, because it had been up, you know, like 8 feet tall in the over the airport there. So let's see. And New York has won the Safe Shoot Gun, verify this, Safe Shoot Gun, Knife, and Sports Show at the Safe Shoot Shooting Sports Complex in Kingston, New York. So Mike out in Long Island, there's one for you out there. Let's see. We do have the new numbers from Michigan State Police, and we are up over 700,000, 703,390. And actually, the pending has come down about 9,000 this last month. So, and that accounts for the 7,000 or 8,000 or 9,000 that it went up. So outstanding. They're starting to work through this, apparently. Maybe I'll get a note back from Lieutenant Amy. I still have not gotten anything back from her. So I think it's Craig from Ann Arbor. If you got a question, I still don't have an answer. Let's see. Last week we talked about reloading for the M1 Garands, and I want to say that the idea, a lot of people go, well, it's just a 30-06, you can load for it, but it's actually a different load. John from Danville, Illinois, called up and said his wife got him a M1 Garand for Christmas. What a great gift that was. And he was thinking about doing some hand loading. So I looked up and we saw some Federal ammo that is specifically designed for M1 Garands. And that is, I want to say it's kind of a less of a softer power pulse. It's a 150 grain bullet and it's a soft power pulse. Compared to some of these really hot 30-06 cartridges that you can get, especially things like the Super Performance and stuff where they're really, really trying to push it out, the Hornady Super Performance. And so I was looking up some recipes this month or this week on it. And so I found several of them. And it's interesting. Because everybody's got their little take on it. There's all of them, though, only use 150 grain bullets because the heavier bullets are harder to get moving, which cause higher pressure. So these are 150 grain bolt tail full metal jackets, and they use one guy uses 46.4 of H335. And he gives all the other things on it, like which brass and which primers and stuff. Some other guy goes, that's good for everything, but I'd use 44 grains of IMR 4895. Well, I actually went in and found some articles, you know, because it's one thing when somebody on the internet says, this is what I use and this is what I don't use and stuff like that. But when somebody publishes something in a magazine, like this was actually out of the American Rifleman, they had an article of they did some 30-06 hand loads, but they actually not only did they do it with the 150 grain Winchester power points, but they also did it with a 168 Berger bullet. And these are the very low drag bullets. And what they're trying to do is, you know, for accuracy and stuff. So a lot of times the different things that they use, the different recipes are just like with any other hand loading where you are tailoring the load to your particular rifle. So let's say with that 150 grain Winchester PowerPoint, they used 49 grains of IMR 4895. Or 48 grains of Hodgson 4895, or 49.5 grains of IMR 4064. What I'm saying is they're all around the same, but it's the little bit of adjusting you do to work out for your barrel harmonics. You know, and the barrels could be slightly different. I mean, you might have my Garand has a 1944 barrel in it, but you might have one that's got actually does it or does it not? It might have a 1960s barrel. It might have been replaced. You can tell on a Garand if you look where the operating rod is between the wood of the upper hand grip and the lower hand grip where the handle actually goes, you could see it'll be stamped on the barrel what the age of the barrel is. So you could have a 1944 barrel or you could have a 1962 barrel, and it could be that they were forged slightly different, something a little different in the metallurgy. So again, that's the beauty of hand loading, is you can come up with all sorts of different loads within a certain parameter. You want to try and keep it, you know, soft for the Garand. Now, I want to say, I did also look up, because John mentioned this, there's a company called Schuster, Schuster Manufacturing, and actually their phone number here, and I'll give the phone number out, it is 419-476-5800. Well, 419 is a Toledo area code. So I want to say that's pretty cool. It's just down the road here. So they make an M1 Garand adjustable gas plug that goes in essentially the little chamber that's below the barrel. And normally when you look, it's got like a cross, like a Phillips head screwdriver. Well, this one here has a little round special tool that you use for it, but you can change the plug inside and it varies the gas port. So that's kind of cool. Let's see. I was looking at some, imagine that. I was looking at some guns this week. Well, I enjoy rimfires. And, you know, it's funny. And actually, I heard Theron was talking about them. Matter of fact, I got another thing to talk about there that Theron's going to like. So I'll wait to talk about him in a little bit. But he was talking about 22s and self-defense and stuff. And there's actually, there's a company called Heritage Manufacturing. Now, Heritage makes some reasonably priced, good quality, not super, super great quality, but, you know, good quality, 22 caliber revolvers in single action. And so they look a lot like a Ruger Single Six or an old Colt and stuff like that. Well, the thing is that they have come out with a new model called a Barkeep. And it's meant to be, it's got kind of an old Western flair. It looks like looks a little bit like an old cowboy gun. And it's got a 2-inch barrel on it. So it's meant to be kind of a, you know, the barkeep keeps it behind the bar. And he's ready to break up any fights in the bar or something like that. But it's a cute little 2-inch barreled revolver in single action. Like I said, looks like a Ruger Single Six or something. And it comes with wood grips, but it also comes with these really cool looking pearl grips. Okay. Well, fake pearl grips, but, at any rate, they're pretty cool. And they're like $180 for the wood ones and $189. Now I got to tell you, I see these Heritage, you know, there's that, Rural King, and it's got guns all the time on sale up there at Heartland and online and stuff. And they actually have them for $129. So if the MSRPs are $180 and they're going for $129 or $130, that's a pretty good price. So at any rate, we have got Tom from Detroit on the phone, and he's got a comment about 30-06 reloading. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Hi. Yeah, about that Grand reloading. Yeah, I started reloading for Grand quite a while back, and there used to be a guy at Hodgson who was kind of their expert in the old military reloading. You know, the thing about the Grand was, the long operating rod, it was the port pressure down there at the very end of the barrel where the gas goes in into right. the gas system. It can't be over 5,000 pounds per square inch. So the idea was that, you weren't supposed to buy commercial ammo over 165 grains. And I think that was more because of the powder burning speed. With the slower powders, the pressure would be too high by the time, the right. bullet got down that far. That, and you know what I was told was H380 was the slowest powder to ever use. Now I asked the guy at Hodgkin, their expert there, and he said that he thought that H380 was right on the borderline. So he wouldn't actually come out and say it was okay, because back at that time, you could go out and you could buy the military surplus. What they were doing was they were pulling the military surplus ammo apart and selling the components, and right. there was a lot of the 163 grain black tips, and they had a real long, hard copper case on them, and so you'd want to use a slower powder with those, I got the book from the military what they use, but I couldn't find, they use like powders that they don't make anymore.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And actually, there's a discussion that the Hodgkin 4895 was actually developed in conjunction with the Garand. So the, apparently that's the one that's like the closest approximation today.
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, I've reloaded a lot of 4895 and, you know, for Garand, but, you know, I mean, it barely fills half the case. That's kind of, I started loading with the 380, but I have the adjustable gas port too. So I won't use anything lower.
Which essentially what you're doing is you're using a smaller opening on it to reduce the pressure that gets to the op rod, right?
Yeah, I adjusted it so it wouldn't cycle, and then just little by little until it would just barely cycle. I can use, I don't use anything heavier than like a 165 grain, but, you know, I can shoot the 150s with the faster powder with no problem. Still cycles. I can't remember exactly how I did it. I think if I adjusted it to the faster powder or the slower powder, I had to do it so they both worked.
Isn't this a wonderful hobby?
I don't know. You were talking about the metallurgy, and I have never heard anything about your peak pressure when that, you know, when that round is basically just engaging the rifling. I think that's where your peak pressure is, and if there's a separate SAMI, you know, safe pressure for that.
No, I think what I was referring to is the construction and the metallurgy and how it affects the vibrational characteristics of the barrel, which is what you're kind of tweaking when you're working up a recipe for your own gun. You know what I mean?
I never heard of any failures with the Garand except for the op rod, you know, bending because of too high of a port pressure.
Yep. That's the failure mode is the bending of the op rod. And there are actually, I'll have to look this up. I'll continue my Garand investigation here. But there's also newer, stronger op rods, too. But I don't know that, the best thing is just don't bend it in the first place, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, 150 shoot good, but, you know, I really would like to, I mean, 30-06, I like shooting the heavier bullets. I like the 200 grain Sierra Match Kings with I think it's 4350, H4350 really shoot good.
Yep. Well, thanks, Tom, for your information today. As always, I appreciate you listening, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to look into some more stuff about it. We'll talk about it again next week, okay?
Real good. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. We've got Ed from Ypsilanti with a comment about the Heritage 22. Hi, Ed.
Hi, is this powder talk?
No. Well, it could be. No, we're talking ammo talk, gun talk.
Yeah. I have a question about gunpowder, but actually, yeah, I was calling about the Heritage. A buddy of mine just bought a Heritage, and I wasn't sure if he said 2-inch or 10-inch, because I think he bought it with a 10-inch. Now, this thing looks like a net, like a Buntline Special on steroids.
That's what they do. Heritage makes some affordable reproductions, like a Buntline with a long barrel. They also make a revolver carbine too. So a lot of cool things that Heritage makes.
Yeah. I mean, this thing even looked longer than a bunt line I'd seen. It was like, if you put a stock on it, you got a short barrel rifle. It was really, really interesting.
I think that I saw one advertised where they did one with a 16-inch barrel. So that might be what he got.
That might be it. I couldn't tell. He was showing me a picture of it at work. Well, that is cool. Have you shot it yet? Oh no. He's got so many guns he buys. He never shoots. He just collects them. I do have a question listening to you and Tom on powder. And he mentioned that, you know, and I got to thinking about this. So you have too much pressure from some powder formulations, so you load less powder or you buy a slower burning powder. And is there a downside to having a smaller volume of powder in a casing? My guess would be you get a faster flame front, but I don't know.
Well, I want to say that's why you have to use a recommended recipe, because you can't go by just looking, well, I'll fill it up or I won't fill it up or whatever. The thing is that I want to say that typically a full case is an easier igniting set of, recipe, okay? Because what happens is if you have a case that's only halfway full, then theoretically, you may not have the powder backed up against the primer port.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and so, you don't want to put any cutting powders in like milk sugar or something like they do with drugs, right?
You know, I have heard of people who...
I should say those other drugs. Yeah.
I have heard of somebody doing something like that but the thing is that what happens a lot of times is in hand loading, I prefer a powder like for handguns and stuff that fills the case because it allows for a safer operation. I'm always very, very careful so that I'm properly charging a case, because what happens is if you have a powder that only is like a third or a half of the case, you could theoretically double charge it.
Yeah, I thought that's what the metering scales were for. Yeah, I might get into it someday if I ever retire. You know.
Well, here's what happens is you typically do not meter when you're doing a rifle. I measure every case. Okay, I mean every charge, because I'm going for accuracy. But when I'm doing a handgun and I'm sitting there and I'm doing 100 rounds, 500 rounds, something like that, I set up my powder measure to accurately discharge the right amount, and then I just check it periodically. You know what I mean? So and so what happens though is sometimes people can, and this is if they get distracted when they're working. And actually, this is why you don't want to be drinking or anything when you're doing it, you know, having a beer and reloading some ammo, because what can happen is you could charge it. And if it's one of these charges that is less than half, you could accidentally put a double charge in. Okay. And then you know what happens when that happens, then your gun is self-disassembling. Okay.
I had that happen once at the range. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yep. Hey, well, thanks for listening,
right.
Ed. Thanks for
calling.
See you
later. Bye.
Bye. Okay, so, that's good. A couple of things. But no, this isn't powder talk today. This is trigger talk, and it's all connected, you know, guns and triggers and powder and primers and bullet weights and all that kind of stuff. Now, I was going to say there – oh, by the way, and I can't believe I missed this, okay? It actually is very disappointing. I think it was December 30th. I missed it, that it was National Bacon Day. Now, I don't know if anybody else knew about this, but it was National Bacon Day on December 30th. And I missed it last week. Otherwise, I would have mentioned it. But of interest is there's a company called CMMG that makes guns and stuff like that. They also make a product, canned tactical bacon. Okay. I love it. Tactical bacon. Okay. And it actually is, it's a real thing. I mean, it looks kind of funny. They've got a mean looking hog on the front of it, but it comes canned. It's 54 slices in a can, like a Campbell's soup can or something. And it's got a 10-year shelf life. So I want to say if the S ever hits the fan, then you'll have some smoky pork belly to tide you over. So tactical bacon from CMMG. And actually, believe it or not, they sell it at Brownells. Okay. So, and it's not actually that bad. It's like $24.99, $25. Now that's 54 slices. So that's probably 2 pounds. And, you know, we always laugh. I guess it's a thing from the South, but my daughter-in-law talks about, oh, you guys got the good bacon, the $10 bacon. $10 bacon is the good bacon down south, apparently, in Louisiana. Not the cheap $3.99 bacon, but $10 bacon. So anyway, we'll talk more about this when we get back. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WAM Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham! Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And let's see, we just had a rousing conversation about tactical bacon, so that's good. Let's see, there's a lot of new products coming out. And one of the companies that this is, I just thought this was kind of like overkill, but Crimson Trace. Now, I normally think of them as a laser company, and then they've also moved into optics, but mainly like the small red dots and things. And by the way, there's a new one out. I can't wait to talk about that today. But they Crimson Trace launches 50 scopes, 50 new scopes for 2021. I want to say, holy cow, that is a lot of scopes. And they're all cool. Okay, I don't know pricing-wise on them, but they've got, I think the reason there's so many of them is because they have these ballistic drop calculating kind of reticles where the reticle is designed specifically for, you know, a certain round and the characteristics of it. So there'll be ones for, you know, 6.5 Creedmoor and 350 Legend and 223 and all the different ones. And then, of course, you take the different focal lengths and the different magnification powers and things like that. So they came up. So out of these 50 scopes they've got, they've also got 17 different reticle options. It's like, holy cow, unbelievable. But that'll be interesting to watch because if they're reasonably priced, they'll do okay. If they're, you know, $1,500 scopes, I just don't see them having that much market out there. But we'll see. Now, here's the story that I said, wow, this is cool. And I think that actually, I don't know if Theron's listening, but he's going to want to get one of these, okay? Kel-Tec. Okay, which is kind of a value producer, but they're pretty innovative, okay? Well, they just announced, just like, you know, Ruger has announced their 5.7 by 28 pistol, the semi-automatic pistol that runs that FN round, the 5.7 by 28, the little bottle, you know, bottleneck pistol cartridge. And they make the PS90 and stuff like that, which is in a carbine. And I know Theron loves that gun, okay? Well, Kel-Tec just came out with their P50. And the P50 is a pistol. Now, and you got to look this up. It's a pistol, and it's Kel-Tec, K-E-L-T-E-C, the P50. And it looks like a... Oh gosh, like a, you know, something from Buck Rogers or something like that. But it uses the PS90, the P90 mags, which are a 50 round mag. Okay. It's a 50 round double stacked mag that it lays down flat on top of the grip and the action. And it does also on that FN P90, and the rounds are sideways, and then it turns them at the last minute when it goes into the chamber. Well, this one, it lays on top of the action, let's say, and then you actually close the action, kind of like a machine gun style, you know, cover that comes down, and it's got the barrel in it. It is so cool. So cool. And so I'm thinking, oh man, and it holds 50 rounds, just like the P90 does. So, and just like the PS90, the semi-automatic one. So there's a P90 that is a fully automatic one for the people that want to have an NFA firearm, but then there's the PS90, which is semi-automatic. And that is so cool with those mags. And now you could have the carbine and a pistol sharing the same mags with the same ammo. What a cool gun. So I think it's pretty neat. And you should look it up because It just looks cool. And it looks like I said, it's got like a breech that closes over the magazine with the barrel. It's just so cool. Let's see. And it's got an MSRP of $995, which is not out of line for something like that. And so it'll probably be it'll probably be close to that right out to shoot, but it'll come down. It'll be down like the $799, maybe, you know, $850, something like that. So it'll be pretty good. Let's see. Also, I saw a new rifle that came out, and I think it's kind of misleading a little bit, but I think that there's an opportunity that they could actually address this. The company is Savage, and you all know I like Savage guns. I like Savage rounds, like the 300 Savage and stuff. And I do have some other Savage, rifles as well. And they came out with a new gun. And it has a straight pull action, which seems to be getting popular again, like the old Swiss 7.5s with the straight pull. I've got a Russian biathlon rifle that's got a straight pull in 22. Well, they came out with this new one called the Impulse, and they call it the ambidextrous straight pull rifle. And I thought, well, that is cool. Being a straight pull, I wonder if that's actually ambidextrous in terms of being able to switch the bolt handle over to the other side. No, it's not. Mainly the ambidextrous part is that it has a tang safety rather than one on the side of the action, or one down at the trigger guard or something like that. So it's got a tang safety that they talk about it being ambidextrous. But I could see that they could probably make a switchable bolt, because there are a lot of left-handed shooters out there, and many people like to shoot left-handed, if they're left-handed, they don't want to learn to shoot right-handed necessarily, because they have left-eye dominance and just they're more dexterous with their proper hand, which is in their case left-handed. And I think about that because I've got two grandchildren that are both left-handed. And so I'm thinking, oh, when I get them rifles and stuff, I'm going to have to get them left-handed ones. So at any rate, and they came out with three versions of it. There's a Precision, there's a Predator. Let's see, they call it the Impulse Big Game, the Impulse Predator, and then the Impulse Hog Hunter, which is like a short barrel, but with a heavy caliber, like 308 or 300 Win Mag. So pretty cool. Anyway, now this is another bit of a gear review. And I want to say this is something brand new. Leupold, which is a excellent optics manufacturer. I have some Leupold scopes. I love them. And they have come out with some things that are like the small RMRs, the rugged miniaturized red dots, but they all stand up pretty tall on top of the mag or on top of the slide. Okay. Well, they have come up with a unique design, totally different, where the optics part is like a little tube that's on top of the slide, but the battery compartment and the electronics and stuff actually hangs off the back of the slide, and it's about the width of the slide. And so it looks like a little extension on the back of the slide. But what it does is it allows the overall package to not be so tall. So it could fit in a holster for concealed carry. It could be comfortable and not like I want to say not like a great big knob on the top like some of the red dots are. So I want to say I think it looks pretty interesting. It's called a Leupold Delta Point Micro. Okay. So, and what it does is it actually looks like a little tube. Almost the image you get is almost like you're looking at a red dot through a ghost ring. And it actually it co-witnesses with the front sight. I want to say it's kind of brilliant. And the fact that it hangs, they're showing it on the back of a Glock. And you can still take the slides off and stuff. Now, if you have to remove it if you're going to take the firing pins out and things like that. But for just normal field cleaning and stuff, it just slides right off with it. So it is pretty cool. It's and they only make it right now. They're making it for the Glocks, and they're making it for the Smith & Wessons, but they're adding new ones too. Because what it does is it replaces the rear sight. And so they make it specific to the gun. Usually, you know, if you've got a dovetail or if it's screwed on, it's got a, it's kind of a unique placement on every gun. All the rear sights are different on most guns. Okay. So they only do it for Glock right now and for, the Smith & Wesson, like M&Ps and stuff, but they are adding new ones all the time. And I think that it is quite an interesting sight. It's a very innovative design. And let's see if I can see what they're charging for it. I think it's like the MSRP again is $519, but it's going to be for $399 at Brownells. So that's actually a pretty reasonable, you know, in the ballpark range for and that's when they first come out. They usually find them their way down. But it's pretty neat. And again, it's called a Leupold Delta Point Micro. So I think it's a pretty cool thing. Let's see. What else have I got here? I'm going to back up. I was actually, you know what I was trying to avoid today? Maybe you didn't notice. Maybe you're thinking, oh, wow, this is great. We're having gun talk and we're just talking about gun. I've been trying to avoid politics today. and I think I'll stick with that theme right now. I'd like to know what you guys, I got a call from John last week when he got a grand from his wife. What other kinds of things did people get from the family, or did they get for themselves for the holidays? I know of people who got some hand loading stuff, and I'm actually in the mood to just do some hand loading. I honestly haven't done any hand loading in a while. And I've got all my powders and my primers and my projectiles and stuff like that. And all this talk lately on Trigger Talk of powders and hand loading and stuff like that, I've really gotten in the mood to do it. So I do need to get down. And actually, even though my barn is not heated, my garage is. So, and I've got a workbench. Actually, up until I built the barn, I had a workbench in there. It's still there in the garage that has, it's a wood topped, workbench, you know, like a 2-inch thick, laminated top on it. And I actually mounted, and you know what happens is you don't always, want to have all of your stuff mounted all the time, because if you have two or three presses and a powder measure and a case trimmer and stuff like that mounted, that pretty much dedicates that bench to that purpose. Okay. So what I did is I got myself, these little, I want to say they're nuts. I think they call them cabinet nuts. And what they did, I drilled holes in the top of the workbench. And from the bottom, you put in this little bushing that has a nut on it. And then, so now I have like four or five different spots on my bench that I use push pins. Now, for those of you who are in the automotive industry, you know what push pins are, but they're the little plastic push pins that people hold on plastic parts on a car and stuff like that. And so I put those push pins in the top of the workbench when I'm not loading. So I've got a smooth surface and stuff like that. Then I can pull them out and I can put my press and my powder measures and stuff like that all lined up just perfectly. Let's see. We have got Dan from Chelsea, and he's on the phone with a question about gun calibers. Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you, Dick?
I'm great. What's up?
Enjoy the show. Yeah, my basic, and this is, you know, I realize I was just curious about how many calibers there are and why there are so many. You would think there'd be more standardization, and I know part of the reason is historic, and obviously a pistol is going to be different from a, you know, sporting rifle and so on and so forth, but it seems like there's an overwhelming a variety, and, you know, each has its own nuances, but, you know, could you speak to the history of that, or, you know, where, you know, why isn't just 9mm, 10mm, 308, 223, you know, and maybe a few others?
A lot has to do with the development of the guns and the development of powders and what they're trying to do with them. I want to say, if you look back at the old days where things were black powder and you had large caliber, you started out with things like round musket balls, right? And then they turned into the conical ones when they started having rifled barrels and things like that. Now, nowadays, I want to say there seems to be a quest, and I agree with you, to reinvent and label as such, you know, all these proprietary unique cartridges. When it comes to rifle cartridges nowadays, I mean, it used to be, okay, people would say, well, we had 22s, so yeah, okay. Then we had 243s, and we had quarter bores, which are 250s, and you had 270. But then people all started coming up with, well, what about a 260 or a 284, which is a 7mm? I want to say there's a tendency of the not invented here syndrome, where every gun maker wanted to come up with their own round. You could have a 6mm Remington. You could have a 6-something or a 270 Winchester. I mean, they wanted their names affixed to it, and they always thought everything was better. And through history, those have come and gone. Also, you'll have something like a 280 or a 284, which is 7mm, but like a 280. And then there'll be somebody who is a, quote, wildcatter, and he's somebody who decides that he can make it a little bit better. So he stretches the cartridge a bit, or he necks it down, or he does something. And so it becomes like a 280, a guy named Ackley, Ackley Improved, okay? And eventually, some of those are so popular that they turn into regular commercially produced rounds, okay? I want to say, when it comes to handgun rounds, there was a lot of fumbling around back in the early days with different cartridges, a lot of rimfire cartridges that were kind of big bore, like 44 Russian and things like that. And then pretty much those started to gravitate towards a 32 and a 38. And then, but then actually what's interesting is the guys that made Colt revolvers did not like the name 38 Smith & Wesson to be imprinted on their gun, because, you know, on the breech of the gun or on the barrel, they always put the caliber that it's chambered in. And so Colt did not want their guns to be Colts with 38 Smith & Wesson stamped on them. So they invented the 38 Colt. And the 38 Long Colt, which was the same as the 38 Special, and the 38 Colt was the same as a 38 Smith & Wesson. It's a lot of marketing. It's a search for people wanting, looking for the ultimate in guns or in rounds. Maybe if I had just a little more powder, or if the case was just a little bit longer, or whatever.
Or their machine tooling was wearing out, so they had to change.
What?
Something else. Hey, while I'm on the line, what was the caliber that won the West? You know, if you had to pick one or two.
44-40 was popular. 45 Colt was popular. I want to say there was one called See, again, there's so many different ones, and the military came up with some of their own. They had one called a 4570 government, and mm-hmm. that one was very popular in the late 1800s, you know, like post-Civil War, pre-modern industrial age kind of. But I want to say the 44s were very popular, 45s. 44-40 was a very popular rifle round. But then again, there were also 32-20s and 30, you know, so just a lot of different
rounds. That gets back to my original question. You're an encyclopedia.
Well, I appreciate it. And you know what? It kind of boils down to when it comes to pistols lately, people talk 380, 9mm, 40, and 45 are the biggies, right? The 38's still in there when it comes to revolvers and rimmed cartridges and stuff. Sure, there are various offshoots of some of those, but those are the big handful. And that's also, I want to say, the individual armies of the, and that's, you know, when they talk about, military weapons and stuff, well, almost all firearms started out with military backgrounds. A Mauser bolt action started out as a military round, right? And they were always trying to one-up each other on their ballistics and things like that. Also, some of the countries did not want their ammo to be compatible with other countries. Like the Japanese used the 6.5 Jap, the 7.5 Jap, which was not compatible, but it was close in ballistics to the 30-06 and stuff like that. But they didn't want somebody to be able to pick up their ammo and use it in their guns. So that's why you have the diversity there.
All right. Excellent answer. Thank you so much.
Okay, very good. We got Joe from Tecumseh on the phone about the reloading process. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Morning, Dick. How's everything down here, up your way?
Oh, just fine. How about you?
Oh, good. Over the holidays, I helped a friend mount a RCBS rock chucker press on his regular workbench. But I used a one-inch thick plywood board as the mounting of for the press itself, and then put some of those brass wood inserts that you can screw in, and then you have a brass thread so that would mount to his table so that if he wanted to take it off, it could pull off and go down the basement or so it's not visible.
That is a great idea. The brass inserts that screw in. I had used those kind that have like prongs that come in from the bottom. But it's the same concept, is to have a threaded insert that it makes it easy to take it on and off, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, very good. And actually, one of the reasons you also don't want to leave them out, like in a garage and stuff, is that they can get just from the moisture from, you know, a car going in and out of the garage and stuff like that. It's easy for a press to start getting some surface corrosion on it. You have to be pretty careful and keep them oiled.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Well, Joe, thank you for sharing that. Thanks for listening today. So, gosh, we did it. We did it, a whole show without politics. I'll leave the politics to Ed and and other people on the next couple of hours worth of shows. I'll be listening. Maybe I'll call in. So at any rate, we're going to get through all of this out there, folks. We do have to be diligent because they're trying to use events in recent actions that took place in the Capitol and stuff as reasons for more gun control, even though there wasn't any guns involved with it, except for the Capitol Police. So keep your eyes open. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. I'll be back and see you next week.